These people are crazy, I'm telling you. They're crazy.
Hi, Mr. President. We're crazy.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It's not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Brandcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brand Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to what we will call a very special edition of the Bradcast. As promised yesterday, full team coverage today of today's of Tuesday's State of the Union address, the longest in history by a mile, which may, for all I know, still be going on today as we go to air. But before we get to that, along with Desi and Digby and Drift Class, very quickly, the most important news, in truth, at least as I see it from Tuesday night, Democrats celebrated three special election victories on Tuesday, even as Donald Trump delivered his insane State of the Union address. In Pennsylvania, the party held on to its slim majority in the State House of Representatives, while in Maine, it held on to a State House seat there. The victories continue a trend, as Newsweek has noticed, of Democratic wins at different levels of government across the U.S. in recent months, and, by the way, with huge overperformances in the bargain as compared to results from 2024. Anna Tiburcio and Jennifer Mazzocco became Pennsylvania state reps on Tuesday night, covering districts 22 and 42. Mazzocco won her race in Allegheny County by 64 points, with almost 82% of the vote, compared to her predecessor's 33-point lead back in 2024. Tiburcio received just over 67% of the vote in Lehigh County. Bolts Magazine's election watcher Daniel Nishanian, known as Taniel, on social media, describing the Pennsylvania victories as eye-popping margins. Election website The Down Ballot noted that the two overperformed from Kamala Harris's results in those districts by 17 points and 34 points, respectively, continuing the pattern that we've seen in special elections around the country since Trump took office again last year. The outlet notes that Pennsylvania's State House District 22 is a majority Latino district that swung sharply against the Democrats in 2024 at the presidential level. Joe Biden won the district by 34 points in 2020, but Harris only won it by 18 points in 2024. Well, on Tuesday night, looks like the district bounced all the way back as Dominican-born Anna Tiburcio won by 35 points, outpacing even Biden's 2020 numbers there. In Maine, Scott Herriman beat GOP candidate Janet Boudouin to keep the 94th State House District within the Democratic Party. Though Herriman won with a six-point margin, the down ballot was unable to do an accurate comparison to numbers in the district from 2024, given the way that Maine tracks its presidential election results. But again, no sign that Democratic support is slipping after Trump's first year in office in his second term, as voting is already underway for this year's midterm election primaries, with the critical midterm election day now just 250 days away. but who's counting? And of course, it's not just me who sees the midterm elections as the most important news of the day. Here's Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson on Tuesday night with a bit of encouragement, perhaps, for Democratic voters.
He needs all 4 years, not just two, to fix the mess. And that's what we need. If we lost the midterms, heaven forbid, if we lost the majority in the House, it would be the end of the Trump presidency in a real effect.
Wow, that sounds bad.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Right. In any event, with that important news from Tuesday, with the important news out of the way, back to the dumb news from Tuesday night. As a 34-time convicted felon, adjudicated sex abuser, and accused rapist of a 13-year-old girl, offered an angry, racist, ugly, hate-filled State of the Union address that lasted just under 1 hour and 48 minutes, a record. But it included little of substance throughout all of that time, and even less that resembled truth or reality. He called the Somali Americans living in Minneapolis pirates. He called the mayor of the nation's largest city a communist. He repeatedly called Democrats crazy and sick, and charged that they, not he, was, quote, destroying our country. But most disturbing of all to me, perhaps, he called voting in America a, quote, privilege, as opposed to what it actually is, which is a right for every citizen that must be protected. Instead, he called for a new voter suppression law that would prevent millions of American citizens from being able to exercise that right, not privilege. He is privileged. The right to vote is not. He handed out weird awards, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, to the goalie of the U.S. men's Olympic hockey team, and so many awards to World War II veterans that you'd think he actually opposes the fascism that they fought against. Silly you. That included a Congressional Medal of Honor to a 100-year-old World War II hero that he could not even go 2 minutes before saying that he should get one of those too, and he hoped that Congress would figure out how to give him one. Dozens of congressional Democrats boycotted the night, didn't show up at all. Many of those who did show up appeared to drive Trump a little bit crazy by refusing to applaud or stand up throughout most of his remarks all night. Texas Congressman Al Green, who was quickly removed at the beginning of Trump's joint address to Congress last year for calling for Trump's impeachment at the time, he was similarly removed again at the top of this year's speech for holding up a sign reading, "Black people aren't apes." That in response to Trump's recent posting of a racist video on his failing social media site that depicted Barack and Michelle Obama as apes. When it came to things that Trump pretended were facts, well, he failed there as well, as many fact-checkers simply found it impossible to keep up with Trump's blizzard of lies.
True.
On everything from the economy to jobs to tariffs to foreign wars to healthcare to crime to immigration, taxes, elections, and even when the American Revolution actually began. Just a few examples from AP's best attempt to focus on a few of his too many lies to count in his marathon remarks. On the economy, Trump claimed, quote, "When I spoke in this chamber 12 months ago, I had just inherited a nation in crisis with a stagnant economy. In fact, as AP reports, not quite. Voters were unhappy with high inflation in the 2024 election, but the U.S. economy was far from stagnant. The gross domestic product rose 2.8% in 2024 during Joe Biden's last year in office, a stronger pace of growth than the 2.2% achieved last year during the first of Trump's second term. Quote, "Incomes are rising fast. The roaring economy is roaring back like never before," Trump claimed. In fact, that is not so. According to AP, they note that after tax incomes adjusted for inflation rose just 0.9% in 2025, that down from 2.2% in 2024, Biden's last year in office. The annual gain in Trump's first year is the smallest since 2022, when the nation and the world was clawing its way out of the economic crisis caused in no small part by Trump's horrific management of the COVID crisis, after which inflation soared, causing Americans' inflation-adjusted income to drop. Trump claimed that he, quote, secured commitments for more than $18 trillion pouring in from all over the globe, he said. But as AP notes, Trump has presented no evidence that he secured that much domestic or foreign investment in the U.S. Even the White House website offers a far lower number at $9.6 trillion, and that figure appears to include some investment commitments that were made, wait for it, during the Biden administration. A study published in January raised doubts about whether more than $5 trillion in investment commitments made last year by many of America's biggest trading partners will actually materialize at all, and questions of how it would be spent even if it did. Trump said accurately for a change, the quote, more Americans are working today than at any time in the history of the country. Well, that sounds good. AP cited that comment as true, but noted that the number of Americans with jobs always rises as the population grows. The relevant figure is the proportion of Americans who have jobs. To that end, they note, the unemployment rate is a low 4.3% right now, but was lower when Joe Biden left office at just 4%. During Biden's presidency, in fact, the rate fell to a 50-year low of 3.4%. So you get the idea. And because I don't want to torture you with a bunch of ugly and racist and inaccurate Trump sound bites today, you're welcome. I will torture you only with this brief 2-minute compilation put together by the media outlet Zetio, to give you just a taste of what those of us who watched it actually suffered through on Tuesday night, because, well, this contains an appropriate music bed, I think, in the background to sort of put in perspective the madness on display on Tuesday night in the U.S. Capitol.
A short time ago, we were a dead country. Now we are the hottest country anywhere in the world, the hottest. Our country is winning again. In fact, we're winning so much that we really don't know what to do about it. People are asking me, please, 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 Mr. President, we're winning too much. We can't take it anymore. We're not used to winning in our country. Until you came along, we're just always losing, but now we're winning too much. And I say, no, 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 you're going to win again. You're going to win big. You're going to win bigger than ever. And to prove that point, here with us tonight is a group of winners who just made the entire nation proud. The men's gold medal Olympic hockey team. Come on in. And in 1 year, we have lifted 2.4 million Americans, a record, off of food stamps. So in my first year of the second term, should be my third term, but strange things happen. Let's also ensure that members of Congress cannot corruptly profit from using insider information. Look, nobody stands up. These people are crazy, I'm telling you. They're crazy. That is why I'm also asking you to end deadly sanctuary cities that protect the criminals and enact serious penalties for public officials. The Somali pirates who ransacked Minnesota remind us that there are large parts of the world where bribery, corruption, and lawlessness are the norm, not the exception. I've always wanted the Congressional Medal of Honor, but I was informed I'm not allowed to give it to myself, and I wouldn't know why I'd be taking it, but if they ever open up that law, I will be there with you someday.
Right. So, who are the crazy ones again, Mr. President? You get the idea, and I will try not to torture you with more from him today. You're welcome, if I can help it. But perhaps the best summary of the disturbing if utterly forgettable night came from ABC late night host Jimmy Kimmel, who Trump tried but failed to remove from our public airwaves just last year.
Here's the real state of the union, okay? We have a nutjob wannabe king who's doing everything he can to censor opinions he doesn't want to hear. He has his goons arresting, incarcerating, and killing American citizens. He's got funding for cancer research and children's hospitals while he rakes in literally billions of dollars for himself and his family. He's coming after our right to vote. He's protecting pedophiles and won't explain it. He's lining the pockets of billionaires, all while neglecting the sick, the poor, the hungry, in the name of Jesus, by the way, who you could read all about in a Donald Trump edition of the God Bless the USA Bible that is made in China and available for $99.99. That is the state of the union, okay?
Sounds about right. Joining us now to help us somehow make sense of any of this at all is, of course, as always, our producer and today's birthday girl, Desi Doyen.
Yes, hi.
Sorry to put you through this on your birthday. I really, really am, but happy birthday. And as is the tradition in these difficult times, we are once again honored and relieved to be joined by award-winning Salon columnist and Hullabaloo blogger Heather Digby Parton, and fellow old school blogger and co-host of the twice weekly Professional Left podcast from the Cornfield Resistance of Flyover Country, Illinois, the man known only as Driftglass, though occasionally as Bill. Hey guys, welcome back to the broadcast.
Glad to be here.
Hey, and happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Desi.
Thank you so much.
Working on her birthday.
It is what it is, baby. It's
and
the Trump
and
era.
Resenting it, no doubt, as she as she should. All right, guys. To be honest, I don't even know where to start on all of this with you guys today, because it all just seemed to be such just insane fantasy land. Is any of this real? Is this really going on? So to start. Digby, your broad take on the evening and what, if anything, was actually important about it?
Well, I don't really think anything was important. I mean, there were a lot of things he could have talked about that would have been important, like the impending war with Iran, for instance, where mm-hmm. he's got, you know, half the U.S. military arrayed around the country ready to go. But he didn't really talk about that. He had a few, you know, passing words, mostly. You know, I think I've heard people describe this in various ways as, you know, a reality show, a wrestling match, a game show where he was caught. He had all these people there that he was calling out every 5 minutes from, you know, he had Erica Kirk there. She was crying and talking about her, and he had all these lurid, you know, bloodthirsty tales of,
yes.
you know, horrifying incidents of poor, you know, young beautiful young women being killed by undocumented immigrants. And he went on and on about that and had people in the audience there, and he was really milking it for all it was worth. It was really pretty gross. I mean, that went on for a long time.
But I will, I will note that one of those bloody tales where he said the murderer came in through Joe Biden's open border, it was actually a U.S. citizen who did the murder.
Well, I mean, look, the lying, everyone, if you didn't watch it, just assume that virtually everything he said was a lie. I mean, yeah. It was insane. I mean, the fact checkers looked like they'd just been hit over the head with a 2x4. The job, they really earned their money last night.
Yeah.
But this whole thing was, you know, I mean, there was a lot of discussion. I thought the wrestling metaphor was kind of interesting because it said that this is all about good and evil, and you have the USA chance, and then you have the shame chance. And they had, and he had the audience, which was, you know, there were Democrats in the audience, not as many as that there might have been, but there were quite a few. And the whole Republican Party just leaping to their feet every 5 minutes or less, clapping wildly like a bunch of trained seals at absolutely everything he said. And it was all kind of, I think, for people in the audience, you know, watching at home, were just going, really? I mean, what was so great about that? But it was just one, you know, ridiculous applause line after another. I'm just going to say, just to wind up, I just feel like the State of the Union under Donald Trump, and maybe we just need to get rid of it altogether. They can send this up in a written report. They don't actually have to do it. the televised aspect of this, it's no lie. That was not a speech that we watched. That was some kind of a pageant where he had all these people there and he was, you know, having everybody stand up and he was giving out medals. And I mean, some of these guys, the military guys who received, you know, real medals for real service, didn't they deserve their own ceremony? Did they have to be brought in as props for Trump? I mean, there's one guy who's 100 years old who got the Medal of Honor, which you just mentioned, you know, that Trump said he deserved one too.
Yes.
And this guy's 100 years old. It's like Trump was almost saying, hey, you want to leave that thing to me in your will because I could really use one.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Let's just, you know, that guy deserved his own Congressional Medal of Honor ceremony, which is very nice and dignified, and they tell the whole story, and it's not, but it's this bloodthirsty thing where they've got, you know, all this, you know, just horrible, you know, lurid tales of violence in the middle of the State of the Union. I mean, it was just, I was actually writing on social media. I'm going, you know, is this Dateline or what are we watching here? I mean, this is ridiculous. So it's no longer a speech, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And, you know, they're standing up and applauding every, certainly more often than just every 5 minutes was even for stuff like, Democrats are destroying this country, and these guys got up and clapped for that madness. Driftglass, your broad thoughts, and if you thought there was anything important about what happened on Tuesday night.
Well, I want to tag on to what Digby just said, because this was a spectacle, but it was a very ancient kind of spectacle. This was something out of Imperial Rome. This really was out of the blood and gladiatorial stuff in Rome. Trump slowed down and reveled in all these gory images of blood and violence. And I even pulled up some examples. There was Cicero in 63 BC against Catiline, describing Rome as surrounded by daggers and arson and conspiracies to butcher senators in their beds. And Catiline should have been executed already. And Cato the Elder used to end every speech with Carthage must be destroyed. Carthago delenda est. And
that's exactly what I was remembering. Yeah,
it's basic stuff. Mark Anthony held up Julius Caesar's wounds during his funeral oration and said, "See, this is what must be avenged." This was ancient, ugly, awful, fascist stuff. This was blood and country and revenge. The country is divided into victims who are being killed by the monsters that Joe Biden let in. The only one who can save us is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. And I thought to Digby's point about, you know, maybe it's time to just to call it on this whole idea of the State of the Union address. I thought it was very telling that we saw just 4 out of the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices in attendance in the chamber on Tuesday for the speech. I remember when it was a scandal. I guess I'm old enough to remember when it was a scandal of sorts, when I think it was at first just Clarence Thomas who did not show up, if I remember. Then it was Thomas and Alito. Now the only ones who showed up were Roberts, Kavanaugh, Coney Barrett, and Kagan. What does that tell us about the State of the Union itself as much as anything else at this point? What if anything should we make of that, Drifty?
Well, it's now an empty form. It's just a meaningless ritual that we go through over and over again, from the milling around on the House floor to the pundits vamping in advance, just saying nonsense, the speaker making the announcement. But all meaning and importance has gone from this ritual. There's nothing left. This is, I likened it earlier today on a different podcast to a cargo cult, where we just build these images of things that were once important to us, hoping to invoke democracy to come back. But it's all just empty ritual now. Mm. It's all just a show. And it serves no purpose at all, except for when you get a tyrant in office, he gets the opportunity to scream at the opposition, pretty much unopposed because he owns the microphone, and have his dupes and henchmen applaud every line and toss medals around like they're Mardi Gras beads. So there's no purpose served anymore for this. There certainly was no policy discussed, unless you believe that, in fact, I'm going to get free health care and the Trump stop a nuclear war and there's infinite jobs. That's about the only policy stuff that got touched on. Instead, it was just revenge and racism and ugliness for nearly 2 hours.
And someday, perhaps, 100 years or so from now, tariffs will replace income tax and benefit the people.
Oh, and pay the deficit down. It'll pay off the deficit, too. Yeah.
Magic wand, baby.
Digby, among the Democrats who did show up, I think it was somewhere between 30 and 50 who boycotted, I believe, altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats, for the most part, though not entirely, they largely sat on their hands at, I believe, the direction of House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. I saw a lot of criticism of that on Tuesday night on social media, that they should have done something different, though I am unclear as to what. Your thoughts on that, and how would you like to have seen Democrats respond?
Well, I don't mind them sitting on their hands. It obviously bugged the hell out of Donald Trump. Well, that was good. So I'm fine with that. And he, you know, he just couldn't stand it. But I did think that there was a moment at which they should have all, just out of self-respect, stood up and very, you know, deliberately and systematically walked out of that speech. Mm. And that was when he looked at them and he said, these people are crazy.
Yeah.
They are responsible for everything bad that's happening. It was just pointed right at them. And the Republicans, including, there was a close-up of Pete Hegseth, the, you know, Secretary of War, standing up and just cheering wildly for this. That is a disgusting moment. And I think, to me, it was very telling. The idea that they would, you know, I mean, we've had partisan warfare before. And definitely seen it in the last few years. But that was just a direct slam at the entire party in front of the whole country. And the other side was just cheering like a bunch of maniacs. I mean, they were turned into animals on that.
But that did not look good for Republicans or Donald Trump when they did that. I mean, I think
I hope people saw it that way, because to me, what I saw was the Democrats sitting there. And I thought that's a moment. All the rest of it, I guess, sit on your hands, do whatever, you know, just don't look forward, whatever it is that you're doing. I'm not going to argue with that. Everybody has to, you know, do their own thing. And it did bother Trump, so that's good.
Yeah.
But that moment was such a direct insult that they didn't have to make a scene. They didn't have to yell or do anything. Just, you know, in a very dignified fashion, get up and go, okay, I'm done. That's too much. And I would have liked to have seen it. I didn't expect it. But as I was seeing them kind of sit there, as he just, you know, basically slapped them all across the face in front of the whole country, and they sat there and took it, I thought, you know, this is one of those moments where you can understand why people believe that the Democrats just, you know, are weak and have no pride. Because, you know, any normal person in a situation like that, because they didn't have to stay, you know, they're free to go. And they could have done that. So a missed opportunity, in my view.
I think that's a fair point. I did think the overall strategy, while I wasn't sure if it would be effective, it certainly seemed like it was, because as the speech went on, it clearly got under his skin. And as you said, you know, bothered the hell out of him, Driftglass. I think that was appropriate. I mean, I think that was easy to see and is why he ended up with some of his most obnoxious remarks, like these people are crazy. I think it drove him nuts.
Yeah, this was, and the purpose of this speech was not to persuade anyone of anything, because I can't imagine a normal human being watching this and looking for nuance and subtlety, etc. I, for one, passed out about an hour into it because I have I have a drinking game with myself where I take a shot every time he said, like never before, like no one's ever seen.
Oh, man. That was
about an hour into
dangerous.
Oh, you must have had to call an ambulance.
Yeah, I can't believe you made it an hour. Yeah.
Oh, it was bad. It was very, very bad. I had to have my stomach pumped. It was awful. You know, normal, this was like the lowest rating State of the Union and the longest. And nobody's watching this for the nuance and the subtlety. This is for Fox News. We're going to do a bit, and we're going to yell and scream and jump up and down so that Fox News is going to have something to put on the air to talk about the dear leader. But this was all about keeping, you know, I think of this as like a 2-hour Willie Horton ad.
Mm.
You know, this is keeping the 38% or less who are still loyal to him on side. That's all this was. And if the purpose of a State of the Union address is to talk about policy, it's a failure. If the purpose is to get your team fired up for the election, Jesus, this was a failure.
Mm.
But you know, and I hope we're going to talk about Abigail Spanberger, because that That was the real speech of the night.
We are, we're gonna get to that after a break. And I want to thank you for that Willie Horton deep cut there. And I feel like I might explain it, but if anybody doesn't know what it is, well, that's their problem. Look it up. It was also telling what Trump did not mention on Tuesday night. And since you were passed out for the second half, I'll mention that he didn't mention ICE, I don't believe, even once. He did not mention the American citizens, Renee Good and Alex Preddy, who were murdered by ICE and CBP. Donald Trump's direction, essentially. He claimed that he was against political violence of any kind, but he did not note the assassination of Minnesota's Democratic House Speaker, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, killed by a Trumper. He didn't, perhaps to his credit, mention the 2020 election. I guess someone prevented that from happening, though he did claim that cheating is rampant in our elections and the Democrats, quote, want to cheat, have cheated. And quote, their policy is so bad that the only way they can get elected is to cheat. He barely mentioned the fourth anniversary of Russia's war on Ukraine, which I think is this week. He did not even mention his ballroom or his Arc de Trump, maybe to his credit there. He also didn't mention Jeffrey Epstein or the bill that he signed himself to release all of the documents in the Epstein file. Driftglass, did I miss anything there?
No, that about covers it. You know, it is telling. Exactly right. There's this gargantuan hole in the middle of the speech, which is where everything that everyone else is talking about and interested in is completely glossed over. And it's all about 5,000, the Dow, and infinite jobs, and how rich we are and how much we're winning, which is hilarious in its own dark way.
Digby, former top Republican, now never Trumper, Bill Kristol, who I know you've been a lifelong fan of. He apparently did not watch the speech either. He doesn't give an analysis per se, but he apparently skimmed the transcript. He noted what he didn't see mentioned as well. Speaking of things that weren't mentioned, he noticed equality rights, the rule of law, the Constitution, republic, democracy, immigrants, although he mentioned immigration, opportunity, and justice. And while I never thought I would be quoting Bill Kristol favorably, he wrote, quote, our president has no interest in elevating what is distinctive and admirable about America. Kristol writes, nor does he have any interest in addressing instances of gross injustice in America. For now, those are our tasks and our duty. It is, after all, our union, not Donald Trump's. Digby, would you like to say something nice about Bill Kristol?
Well, yes, I will. And it's not the first time either, because in the last, especially the last year or so, since Trump too, Kristol's been on fire. They're calling him Woke Bill Kristol as a bulwark. So, yes, I mean, who can argue with that? The man doesn't, those words are not in his vocabulary. I mean, when have you ever heard him say anything, use those words when he's speaking? It's not, it's just not something he thinks about, that he understands, that he cares about. And those are kind of abstract philosophical sort of concepts that, you know, those of us who actually, I don't know, took eighth grade civics and history are familiar with. But, he wasn't paying attention. And so he doesn't know anything about that. So I'm not surprised. And what he has
you're
done
talking about Trump is not familiar with
so
that.
Trump,
Bill
yeah,
Kristol
oh,
is,
no,
yes,
no, no,
okay.
No. Kristol
yeah,
is, yeah. Kristol is truly, I mean, say what you will about him. He's an erudite, you know, thinker. I mean, whatever. No, I'm talking about
nice
Trump.
Way to put
I'm talking
it.
About,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about Trump, who you know, he would never use those words and would never discuss things in that way, because that's just not how he thinks about the country. The country to him is, you know, it's kind of one of his businesses. It's kind of like selling those watches or the guitars that he sells. You know, he's trying to make a buck, and he's trying to, you know, keep people, you know, fix some sort of, you know, problem that he sees, some discrete problem in his mind. You know, it's immigrants who are ruining everything, and he's going to put tariffs on, and that's going to solve everything. You know, he's simple-minded. I mean, let's face it, the guy's, you know, he's not exactly a Mensa. So it's not surprising to me that he did that. His speeches have always been this bad, but I have to say, this year was different. I felt, and I don't know how you guys felt watching it, but he you know, this pageant that he put on, this show, the you know, the bread and circuses act that he was doing there, I found that to be a little bit different. I mean, he's always done a bit of that. There's always been the sort of, you know, what is it, Lenny Skutnik or whatever, the, right, guy, the first guy that they brought up that saved some people in the Potomac. You know, this idea, especially of bringing in victims, that's an innovation that Trump did. And he leaned on it so heavily. I mean, it went on and on and on. I wonder if anybody's actually added up the words that he spoke. And if he hadn't done all that with all the applause and everybody crying and all the rest of this stuff, how long that speech really was, because it didn't seem to me like there was much meat to it. It seemed like it was way more leaning heavily on that. And by the way, by the end of the speech, he was clinging to that podium, you know, like life itself.
Yes.
His voice was raspy. He ran out of gas. I mean, that guy definitely ran out of gas. And he was mad and he was ready to, you know.
And he got out of the room. He got out of the room quickly, too. He didn't hang around and shake hands as they usually do for, you know, 30 minutes. He was out of there.
Yeah, I think that they were definitely using the all the people that he was handing out medals to. They were, and all the victims that he was trying to recognize. I think they were definitely leaning very heavily on that, like he was using their applause for himself, using them as props, as you mentioned.
Their pain and their victims.
Yeah.
And in some cases,
genuine accomplishments that he was also accruing to himself with their applause.
And I was going to award the deep cut prize to Driftglass for Willie Horton, but I think Digby got in just under the wire with Lenny Skutnik there. So good job.
Absolutely. It's always
that's
Digby's
obscure.
First and foremost. Digby's always first. So just note that.
There you go. All right, quick break.
Nobody remembers Lenny Skutnik but me.
Oh, I do, and I'm not nearly as old as you. All right, quick break.
That is true.
We are back.
You were just a child.
I was. Let's say I was. Heather Digby Barton and Driftglass are going to stick with us here for the hour, as will Desi Doyen, as always. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with, the response, the Democratic response to all of this from freshly minted Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger, and a confession that I need to make about Tuesday night's State of the Union. All of that straight ahead as Digby and Driftglass stand by. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. If you haven't noticed by now, it's no easy feat finding facts, real facts, not alternative facts, over your public airwaves. We try to bring you real facts, truth, and clarity without fear or favor each and every day on the Bradcast. But we need your help to do it, and that help is needed more now than ever. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thanks. Actually, let me play in that so I can give myself the Deep Cut Award for the day. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Actually, that Deep Cut Award goes to longtime listener, our friend, occasional bumper music Sherpa, KCP. Thank you for the suggestion, sir. All right, before I derail everything, Heather Digby Barton and Driftglass are still here with us. Before I derail everything with my confession, let's play just a bit of the Democratic response to Donald Trump's State of the Union on Tuesday night from Virginia's new Democratic governor, former House Rep Abigail Spanberger, and then we will get some thoughts from both of you guys on the other side.
In his speech tonight, the president did what he always does. He lied, he scapegoated, and he distracted. And he offered no real solutions to our nation's pressing challenges, so many of which he is actively making worse. He tries to divide us. He tries to enrage us, to pit us against one another, neighbor against neighbor. And sometimes he succeeds. And so you have to ask, who benefits from his rhetoric, his policies, his actions, the short list of laws he's pushed through this Republican Congress. Somebody must be benefiting. He's enriching himself, his family, his friends. The scale of the corruption is unprecedented. There's the cover-up of the Epstein files, the crypto scams, cozying up to foreign princes for airplanes and billionaires for ballrooms, putting his name and face on buildings all over our nation's capital. This is not what our founders envisioned, not by a long shot.
Well, Driftglass, since I think you were the first to mention her, Abigail Spanberger, in Virginia on Tuesday night in the Democratic response to the State of the Union, I think we all agree it's an impossible job giving the response speech for any State of the Union from any president of any party. So your thoughts, how did Spanberger do? And does any of it make any difference whatsoever?
I think she did great. I don't have any notes to give her. If this is what centrism looks like now, sign me up, because it sure didn't sound like centrism. It sounded very, very Democratic. And I thought it was really smart. She broke it down like into five easy to digest pieces. You know, the kitchen table issues, and then there's tyranny, and we're an international embarrassment now, all the lying and the scapegoating, and then the scandals and corruption. And, it, you know, all the issues that every Democratic consultant says you should do at least one of these, she stitched all five of them together. Mm. And she put them together in a way that kept asking the same question over and over again, which is smart rhetoric, which is Trump working for you? And the answer was, we all know he's not. We all know he's not. And she gave something you haven't seen a lot of recently, which is hope. She pointed out that winning is not something we will do in the future. We are winning now. We're winning elections now, and we're going to win in the fall. And it's that kind of, you know, that kind of injection of hope into a hopeless situation or a very tragic and dangerous situation really does make a difference. Mm. I'm not sure it'll be remembered 2 years from now, but it was a very good speech and very thoughtful, and she hit all the right notes. And I'm seeing a lot of people who are centrist, you know, my own Congresswoman, Nikki Baczynski, who just cares about the farm bill and sensible gun regulation, is talking like me from 4 years ago now, which is amazing to me. But that is, I mean, the center of the Democratic Party and the rhetoric has clearly moved into the active gloves off, no holds barred direction. And I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, an attempted dictatorship kind of may have that effect on people. Heather, yeah. Heather Digby Parton, your response to the response to the State of the Union.
Well, I agree with everything Driftglass said. I mean, I thought it was very good. And I especially liked the way the speech was structured. As he points out, it was done in these bite-sized pieces that nonetheless work together. And they work together on this central question is he doing this anything for you? Is he, you know, making your life more affordable? Is he making your world safer? And the answer that she gave all the time, we all know the answer is no. That is just so brilliant. It's the way that Democrats should do it. You know, people always talk about unifying. We've got to find unity. And what they mean, what they generally take from that is that, oh, we've got to take up a bunch of right-wing issues and say, and take them as our own, because then they'll like us if we do that. That is not true. What she did is the way you do it, which is appealing to the common sense that what we're seeing before our eyes is happening. This is real. You know it. I know it. We all know that the answer is that he is not doing any of these things for you. He's in it for himself. That is a powerful message, and they just can't deny it. I mean, even when you see people interviewed about the Epstein files, for instance, the MAGA people stumble all over themselves. They don't know how to rationalize what he's doing there, the cover-up, or the money, or any of it. So I feel like she gave, this is kind of a good blueprint, I think. You know, every Congress person that's candidate that's running in the fall has to come up with their own way of talking to their own constituents. I mean, there's no national, you know, edict on how you have to do it. But this is a way to stitch all that together, as Driftglass says, into a coherent message that I think is something that the Democrats have been looking for, a way to do it. And it's bold and it's straightforward. It's serious. It's adult. It's mature. It's not, you know, name calling or anything else. And not that I'm against name calling, mind you. I'm really for it, actually. But as far as, you know, a sort of, you know, a serious kind of, you know, blueprint for how you can think about this, how you can try and put this whole thing together, I think she did a really good job. And I hope the Democrats actually listened to her on this. And I hope they kind of looked at that and went, you know, that works, because she got really good reviews. I mean, people really liked it.
Yeah. And you know, what jumped out at me was the fact that she was able to talk about more than one thing at a time. It wasn't have to focus only on affordability now. Nobody cares about all the other stuff. No,
exactly.
She could tie it all together. And I think that that is definitely something that rhetorically Democrats can learn from. Definitely.
And we may weave our way back to that matter in conclusion here, but let me weave over in this direction for a second, because I have to sort of make this confession that I mentioned. I've been spending no small part of the past week or so digging into the claims made by a victim of Jeffrey Epstein, that she was raped, physically assaulted, threatened by Donald Trump at Epstein's home when she was 13 years old. Allegations of which the Department of Justice has been unlawfully hiding in their legally mandated release of the Epstein files, which include at least four FBI interviews with this woman from 2019 and notes taken by the FBI along with all of those interviews. All of it is being hidden right now. Much of these details were originally surfaced by investigative journalist Roger Sullenberger last week when we started covering it. And this week confirmed now, I'm happy to say, confirmed that the documents are in fact being unlawfully covered up by the DOJ, confirmed by NPR, MS Now, CNN, New York Times. Along with Congressman Robert Garcia, the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, yesterday. I've seen a lot more than I've actually shared on the program to date about all of this for various reasons. But I had a lot of trouble, frankly, watching that speech on Tuesday night, that speech of Trump's, and not thinking about these allegations. And I think a lot of people may share that feeling once they learn more about these just horrific allegations and how, you know, insane all of this is, to be honest. I don't really know that I have a question here on this, but I thought I would mention it because I think it really colored the way I saw him on Tuesday night. I had a very difficult time watching it after reading about these allegations, which are apparently credible enough that the FBI interviewed this woman four times. Have you guys been following any of that, Heather?
Yes, I've been following it since last week when I saw the Sullenberger stuff.
Yeah.
And had an inkling of some of it before. There was something that came out earlier about this particular allegation by the one woman, or the girl at the time. And so I was kind of aware of it. And I even made a note on social media, on Blue Sky or something, like, you know, hey, has anybody seen this? You know, and it just kind of disappeared. But since it has resurfaced and we're looking at it again, it is shocking. And it is, if this were attributed to anybody but him and it had come out, let's just say this particular allegation came out about, you know, former Prince Andrew or one of the other people there, it would be all over and people would be absolutely, you know, grossed out by what they were seeing. And yet it's Trump and everybody's kind of walking around on tiptoe, worried about it. But think about this. This woman was interviewed in 2019 during the investigation of Jeffrey Epstein before he was arrested. And then, of course, you know, died in prison. Trump was president when the FBI was talking to this woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of opens up a whole bunch of questions for me about what was going on with that investigation, what he knew, what they were telling him, what was going on. It is appalling. And if we didn't know anything about Trump other than this, you might be able to just say, well, come on, you know, I mean,
these are allegations.
People say things, you know, whatever. This is a guy who said, you know, we have him on tape saying that he grabs women by the you know what. We have dozens of women saying that he did these things. We have his ex-wife Ivana in their divorce proceeding claiming that he kind of did exactly what is alleged that he did with this girl, at least in terms of the violence, because this this allegation features not just, you know, sexual violence, you know, the underage statutory rape part of it, but also actual physical violence against this girl.
Yep.
And he was alleged by his own wife to have done that to her in a fit of anger at her. So if we didn't have all that other information that came long before what we're seeing now, maybe you could dismiss it. But to me, it just looks like a pattern. And sorry, this is a pattern.
Yeah. And these allegations, in fact, go back before the 2016 election.
Oh, yeah.
Documented. And I've been, you know, watching video testimony about it from 2016 that just, you know, not corroborated, merely an allegation at this time. But boy, does it sound credible. Before I get to our closing thoughts here, very quickly, Driftglass, any thoughts on any of that?
If it were out of character, then it would surprise me, but it's not. It's completely inside his character. That absolutely buy that he would do something like this. And when I see him now in pretty much any venue, I just look through him at the 38% who will back him to their dying day. I look past him to the congressional majorities who don't care about any of this, not care at all, who are willing to die on this hill for him. I look at the Supreme Court, who've given him immunity over virtually everything. I look at all the sustaining organizations and individuals and voters who are standing between him and justice and going, that's the problem. They're the problem. He's a horrifying symptom, and he should have been gone long ago. But they are the real problem. And they're going to continue being the problem long after he's gone.
And it may only be me because I've been so steeped in research on this. But, well, we've got just a minute or so here, guys. It feels to me like the jig is up for this guy. And maybe I'm being too optimistic, but it feels like he has failed at fascism. And that, you know, it's something that we talked about going back after his 2024 election. And I think I kept saying that, remember, guys, he's really bad at presidenting. He also seems to be bad at fascisming. But, you know, he will continue to try. It will get uglier and more painful and even more dangerous and deadly as he does, as the failure gets worse, which in turn, you know, makes him more desperate and dangerous. But it's beginning at least to feel to me like the jig is up and that everyone knows it. And both of your thoughts, am I being too optimistic here? Am I just living in a bubble in that regard? Because maybe I am. Digby?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I feel like this particular story, this latest one, it really feels like it is kind of a turning point. But I keep seeing turning points, and I'm not sure. But I do agree with you on the larger issue that he's bad at fascism, bad at governing, but he's really good at chaos. So, you know, there is a fallout from that, regardless of whether or not there's any, you know, ideological sort of success that he's going to have in terms of fascism. So I'm not sanguine about that, because bad things can happen in a chaotic situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope you're right. Let me just put it that way. I hope you're right that the jig is up, because this guy, I mean, come on, look what we watched last night. Good God.
Well, I think the jig is up, but it does not, to be clear, it does not necessarily mean the pain is over in any way.
Right,
You know, we didn't even get to the question about whether we're going to a war with Iran in the coming days. So I think there's a lot of bad stuff to come, but it's at least beginning to feel like the jig is up. Driftglass, your thoughts?
It would be ironic if the same week that Trump flunked fascism is the same week that Tom Nichols finally said in The Atlantic, you know, maybe it's fascism.
it's taken this long, eh?
Bill Kristol was way ahead of him on that one. So give some credit where credit is due.
Well, listen, and I've always been one to say, okay, you're a never-Trumper, you're still a Republican, that's fine by me. If you're on the right side of fascism, Sure, it takes some of them a lot longer to get there than others. But if they are willing to, if they're able to come to the right side, I think we're all in this mess together. I'll take all the help we can get.
Yeah, I mean,
Popular front.
Yeah.
I agree with you that it sounds like Trump has failed at fascism, but there's still, as Driftglass says, a whole bunch of people behind him trying to make sure that it succeeds. And so just having Trump no longer be in office won't be enough to take care of that. We are not done with fascism yet. Fascism is not done with us. And as Driftglass has also said, cornered rats lash out and they can do some pretty crazy stunts while they're trying to protect themselves and stay in power.
And including one particular person who is behind him, which is a guy named J.D. Vance, who was sitting there behind him last night.
Oh, yes.
This is not a person that, you know, you want to dismiss because he is very dangerous.
Yes.
Is he any better at fascism?
I think he might be. I don't know, but I think he might be better at it.
Uh-oh.
Fun times ahead.
Fun times ahead. And with those...
Well,
luckily,
the polls say that everybody hates J.D. Vance even more than they hate Trump. So, you know, this is the good... This is what we have to cling to.
There you go.
He may not have the juice, but we're probably going to find out.
On those cheery notes...
Fun will be had whether you like it or not.
Yeah, well, hey, voting has begun. We're going to have our first election results from the midterm elections in what, about a week or so at this point.
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck to us all.
So we're on our way. Hey, guys, thanks so much. Heather Digby Parton can, of course, be read every day at both salon.com and digbysblog.net. You can also follow her, send her your best regards over on Blue Sky, where she is Digby56. And the delightful Driftglass can also be found in Blue Sky at Simply Driftglass. Please tell him I sent you. You can also download his podcast at least twice a week, proleftpod.com, and he's even got a blog over at driftglass.blogspot.com. Thank you, guys. I want to say it's been a delight speaking with you. It has, but you know what I'm saying.
As always, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Guys. All right, we got to get out here. My thanks as well to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at brandblog.com. That service made possible by those of you who hit a donate button when you stop by or who go straight to brandblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. As long as we can, as long as we can stand it, and as long as you can stand us. You can drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Happy birthday, Desi. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.